Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 50. I'm Jim Cornell from The Biotech, and it seems like 50 should warrant some kind of celebration. I just don't really know what. I've heard in the past that 50 is the new 40, so maybe I need to delete 10 podcasts. Now we're getting older, I think it's 60 is the new 50, and so on. I do think it works with money, though, because $60 is definitely only worth 50 these days. We're still rainless here. The forecast was for flash floods, and while there were lots of flashes of lightning, there was no rain. So it's hot, and the hay fever is off the scale. I thought it was just me, but apparently the health line in the UK has been inundated with calls about hay fever. Not that there's much you can do except complain to anyone who will listen, but even my dog walked away. My son started his new school this week, or at least a 3-day trial run. It's definitely different when you're at high school compared to the local village school. Kind of like when you work at a small company and then go to a much bigger one, where you can easily get lost until you find your way around, and you never get to know the names of everyone you work with. You just kind of nod and say hi. It must be great to remember everything. Funnily enough, and I won't name drop here, but one very famous musician that I interviewed once, I actually ran into him at an airport about 2 years later, and he came over to me and said, "Jim, how are you? I still remember that interview we did a couple of years ago." Oh, to have that kind of memory. And then there's the people at university who studied by reading everything once and they remembered it. How I envied that. Although I do, for some strange reason, still remember the crassulation acid metabolism pathway. And I have no idea why, because it's not something that comes up in too many conversations. And it's not been that useful in the media. Maybe if I'd been editor of Arid Plants Monthly. I made that up, I'm sure there isn't one. Anyway, to this week's podcast. The ISCT annual meeting took place recently, and we did get lots of press releases, but I thought that rather than doing an overview, we would take a look at a couple of interesting subjects that were raised during sessions at the event. So we have conversations with Carol Nico, CSO at Biocenic, Dalip Sethi, Director of Scientific Affairs at Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies, Mathieu de Kalbermatten, CEO of Cell Prothera, and Vered Kaplan, CEO of Orgenesis. And so now it's time to take a look at some of the week's news headlines over at thebiotech.eu that you may have missed. Beacon Therapeutics launched with $120 million to develop gene therapies for retinal diseases. There was an article on 6 advancements in Alzheimer's research over the past year. And we had an interesting article on how European Commission proposals on data exclusivity will affect pharma companies. Shortly after raising €255 million, ITM has opened a new facility in Germany. There's excitement over Elis Pharma's autism drug data, and Cellcentric received FDA Fast Track designation for its relapsed refractory multiple myeloma drug. We had a special newsletter on Alzheimer's disease, and because of the wildfires in North America, we had an article on 5 air quality biotech companies making an impact. There was another article on how AI can advance research and treatment of CNS disorders, how biotechs are addressing rare chromosome disorders, and Mithra announced positive data from its CSF1R inhibitor program. New data were published on a breath biopsy for the early detection of lung cancer. Finnish biotech startup Solu raised €1 million to combat global antibiotic resistance, and researchers say open source collaboration is fundamental. Nordic Biosciences cancer biomarker received a go-ahead from the FDA. We had an article on 6 molecular diagnostics companies to watch, and a key regulator of the COVID viral receptor may be a new drug target. There was an interesting look at whether or not ChatGPT can help with drug discovery. Novartis has acquired Chinook Therapeutics for $3.2 billion, and you can read all of these and many more at thebiotech.eu. So now it's time for the interviews, and this week we're looking at a couple of questions that were raised at the ISCT meeting recently. The ISCT stands for the International Society for Cell and Gene Therapy, and it is the global society of more than 3,000 members dedicated to the translation of cell and gene therapies. All of the sessions were very interesting, but a couple caught my attention. And the first was, will allogeneic cell therapy replace autologous when it comes down to patient access? The other was, have exosomes replaced MSCs? My answers are, I don't know, which means it's a good thing we have four guests who were in attendance at the event to talk about those questions. First up, looking at the pluses and minuses of allogeneic and autologous cell therapies, is the CEO of Orgenesis, Vered Kaplan.
Because of the ISCT meeting, we were going to talk about autologous and allogeneic approaches. I wonder, before we even do that, if you could explain what they both are and the difference between the two?
Yeah, so an autologous product is actually one when you're building the therapy, the therapeutic kind of product, using the patient's own cells, right? So you're taking maybe blood, if it's a CAR T, you're extracting from that the immune cells, the T cells, if it's an NK product, the NK cells, and you're actually, or if you're treating a patient, let's say, with a TILS pod, which is a tumor-infiltrating lymphocyte, it's tumor cell T cells that exist in the body, then you'll take out the tumor after surgery. Or if you're taking the patient's own fat cells or stem cells or whatever tissue you're taking out of the body, you're taking it from the patient itself. Why do we do that? Because then you don't have rejection issues, right? Then you don't have the immune system fighting against something that is foreign. That's one. Second, when you're talking about an allogeneic product, you're actually talking about a product that the cells that you use as a base are taken from another patient, okay? So let's say you're a patient who's had multiple chemo, and maybe your T cells are so depleted and so weak that they can't, even if you take them out and you reprogram them, and you boost them up and you activate them, they just can't do the job anymore. They're too exhausted. So you need to take these T cells from a donor. That's an allogeneic. Now, the concept of allogeneic, and people sometimes kind of do not define this correctly, they think allogeneic is a shelf product, because if you're taking a cell from someone else, you can grow it to a huge number of cells and use one cell for all, so, okay? One source for all. Now, that's not exactly the case, okay? Yes, in some cases, when you're using an allogeneic product, you can expand that cell from a donor to several patients, okay? Maybe to a lot of patients. But again, you have limitations on that, okay? Because cells, once you start duplicating and growing them, right, expanding them, it's difficult to maintain the characteristics for a very long time. The second thing is that sometimes you have to do matching, like you do in, you know, when you do a bone marrow transplantation. So this type of group would only fit patients that are this type of blood or this type of, you know, characterization of the genetic characterization. So there's a lot of limitations in different allogeneic, and it's not just, oh, allogeneic, that's a shelf product. No, sometimes it's a patient-to-patient transfer. Sometimes it's from one to many, and that many is defined by X criteria. And sometimes the limitation factor is how much that original cell, when duplicated, can maintain its characteristics over time. So most cases, you're not even using like huge, or maybe you're collecting cells from a cord blood, like you do sometimes with NK cells. So all these different kind of possibilities exist. So we, in many cases, you also need, by the way, decentralized allogeneic products, okay? Because you're taking it from donors to certain locations. There's also a lot of regulatory issues, okay? Like taking blood from one country, sometimes moving to another country, another region, is not always so simple or easy. So there's also many other different considerations of decentralizing or allowing that flexibility to expand capacity, whether it's an autologous or an allogeneic.
So why is it then that allogeneic is being touted as the future of cell and gene therapy if there are so many limitations?
Because look, there's this dream, okay, that we'll take an immune cell, this super immune cell, that we've taken out anything that identifies it as self. So there's no immune resistance to this, right? So you can take it from one patient to another. Okay, same dream exists also for organ transplant, right? Of, you know, changing and making like this super universal organ that you can move to from patient to patient. It's difficult. I mean, the self, the ability of the body to recognize what's his and what's not is very strong. It's what's maintain us. That's what protects us usually, especially if you're going to use the immune system to fight a disease. You certainly don't want to, you know, depress the immune system. So, yes, I mean, it would be wonderful if you could make one T cell that fits all, okay? There's other issues with that. And when you look at the clinical results, yes, there is value in allogeneic, but you have to be careful how you define it. It's not a universal allogeneic always, certainly not for certain cell types. It's not always a one to many. Even if you could build one, like, even look at iPSCs, okay? That's a cell therapy, pluripotent stem cells. The fact is, when you're making a product from an iPSC, even if you make one, you know, like a stem cell that can grow into a full line, you have to, and genetically modify it so you don't have an immune reaction. It's not here. That's what I'm saying. It hasn't been proven clinically. What has been proven clinically are the autologous ones. And, you know, for me, I look at it, you know, using your own immune cells or having this personalized medicine, that's very strong. Because today, we're personalizing the cells, right? But in the future, and there's already work being done on that, maybe we personalize how we reprogram that cell to a patient, right? Not only targeting this, but actually really identifying the cancer that is specific here, right, and targeting it. And some products like TILs, since you can't have an allogeneic TILs, it doesn't make sense, right? You want your own tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes. I assume that there's enough diseases for everyone and there's enough disease stages for everyone. So if you have a very acute situation and you want to take something quickly, so you have a frozen vial of allogeneic, good. But maybe you want a stronger impact, so you want to take the time. And also, another interesting fact is that as time goes on, you know, it used to be, oh, it takes some months to prepare an autologous CAR T. Today, it isn't like that. We're talking about a week, 2 days, and maybe even doing it like straight out. So a lot of things change. But the fact, the one fact that remains, the ability to reprogram our cells, our immune system, is expanding very quickly with synthetic biology, with other things. We need to have that ability if we want to survive in this wonderful world, right? With all the changes we've made to the environment, right? So there's a lot of disease cases coming up, not only cancers. Cell and gene therapies are going to many, many areas today, right? New fields. And you're talking about regenerative products, you know, making new neural cells, skin cells, muscle cells, I mean, bone cells, you make everything. So it's not only just about a CAR T, but that ability to reprogram is something we want to have on a personalized basis. We want to be able, and if there's a universal product out there that we can give, fine. Can we make it always like one huge batch, like you would make a recombinant protein? Not sure, because again, it may be sourced according to blood type. It may be sourced according, maybe you can't make out of that collection of cells that many. Maybe you have regulatory issues of bringing it. Look at IVIGs, there's limitations on that, right? You can't just bring plasma products from one place to another. Some countries don't want it. Someone prefer from their own population. So there's differences in different locations of populations. So this, so it's like a whole zoo out there, right? And of different types of allogeneic products, different types of autologous products, different types of indication. But in the end, it all comes down to this wonderful ability we have of reprogramming cells. And if we want to reprogram ourselves, we want to have that conversation with them and make them do what we want them to do, we've got to have a standardized system to do this. These are algorithms. It's like an app. So you wouldn't think of every algorithm you build out to build a new iPhone for it. It doesn't make sense. You don't want to build new software. So that's kind of what we try to do. We try to offer a standardized platform. And you can use it and just unitize and grow your alginate as much as you want in one location or in three locations. Or maybe you want to do an autologous program and do it in 15 locations.
Is it something that the, as we go forward, the price or the cost will go down in producing these therapies?
Look, I can tell you that even doing it today in these mobile units and standardizing it saves so much cost. It's already a third lower than in working in a GMP facility. Second thing is, if you're not inventing the wheel every time you make a new process and you're standardizing, your development costs are much lower. And if you're working in exactly the same kind of type of system everywhere you work, you don't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in building out GMP facilities that then turns out you don't need them, or you're waiting 3 years until your next clinical trial is approved. So it's an industry that's maturing. And just like the software industry, when it matured, it became standardized and costs went down. So this idea of unitizing the production process and standardizing is really about industrialization. It happens in every area, and it will happen in this industry. And that's why we try to keep an open platform, so any new technology can quickly be interconnected and put inside. And that's why we collaborate with so many different industry partners to make sure we can integrate them into the platform, make sure we can make one standardized, optimized platform, and in that, make the fine-tuning for each product that is in there.
So basically, the future here is a combination of allogeneic and autologous then?
Yeah, like anything else, right? You want to have, look, it's even, think of it again as hardware processing systems, okay? Everybody's got his own laptop, his iPhone, or whatever. But you also have these centralized things, things you need to store a lot of data and you need, right? Or if you have to run very complex things, okay, you have a choice. That's what we all want.
Just as out of interest, when you're talking about taking blood from people and then manipulating that and then putting it back in, how long does that last? Like if you, when you take the blood or...
Typically, what we've seen up till now, that there's a very sustained result. In most of the patients, it's a one-time treatment.
How long can you store that for?
Oh, I mean, again, you can freeze it down, these products. You can cryopreserve them. But you can do that for autologous as well. I mean, the cryopreservation, there's a big conversation. A lot of clinicians, and I've heard this at the conference here, talking about that fresh products are better. Sometimes you just can't get the fresh product. So you should always, again, have a choice of being able to cryopreserve it, right? But if you're close by, it's very easy to make it. What you're trying to reduce here is a lot is the cost. It's costly. You have to, if you're shipping material, the logistics, the cryopreservation, everything, the storage, that costs a lot of money. If you can provide a fresh product nearby, of course, you're saving another third of the cost.
You're right. There's no one-size-fits-all approach.
No,
sure.
Not at all. I mean, it's a whole new industry evolving. I mean, it's like you've got cars, you've got motorbikes, you've got everybody's got his. And look at the recombinants and other things. I mean, in every place you look at, you have diversity, and that's what allows you to be efficient and find the right. And that's why you need flexibility. You need to let these products evolve in a way that allows diversity, that you can be flexible enough that you can make this product and that product, and you don't have to start inventing the whole system again.
Is there the possibility, because you were mentioning how if somebody has cancer, it may not be possible to have enough good cells, I guess, to be able
immune
to...
Immune cells.
To, yeah, but is there... Do you think that there's a potential industry out there for taking blood from people when they're not sick, so that when they are sick, you still have a a pool of, I was going to say a pool of blood. That doesn't sound good, but
no, it's a biobank. No, look, it's not when they're sick and they're not sick. It's like what kills the immune cells in many cases is also the different treatments you give before you give a cell therapy. Right. So one of the things, yes, we actually have a product that we work with that you collect the immune cells before you start all the additional treatments, and then if you need it, then you can use them when they're still, they're not depleted. Of course, I mean, I've even seen products for anti-aging when they're taking immune cells when you're young, or taking them when you're older and activating and making them younger, because part of the process of aging is that your immune cells, that's why you're less make antibodies when you get vaccination, that's why you're more susceptible to disease. There's a whole field around immune cell banking, yes.
Yeah, I could use the anti-aging thing, but it's too late now, I think.
No, I mean, you can actually activate them and expand them and make them young again. I mean, I know it's a big thing in the anti-aging industry, right? And not only because we all want to be young and beautiful, because vaccinations, right? If you can make your immune cells more reactive and more young, and then when you get a vaccine, you will make more antibodies, right? You'll have more of a reaction. So it's a health issue. I mean, anti-aging is no vanity, simple thing. If you think about it, healthcare systems all over the world spend 90% of the budget on the last 10 years of age. So making people healthy while they're aging is actually a huge health consideration and economic consideration, especially as we age more. And it's really important to keep people as they age, to keep them healthy, because first of all, they can enjoy their life. And second of all, because they become less of a burden on society. And third of all, because they're not kind of sucking out all the healthcare budgets. This is good for everyone, especially if you think of the last 10 years of life. It's in most cases, you have a whole, I mean, people should live to a ripe old age and remain healthy. And part of that, a big part of it, is the aging of the immune system. So maintaining immune cells and talking about cell therapies, it's not just, oh, we want to look pretty and make, no, it's about maintaining health and perhaps reducing the chance, the cost of later on cancers and other things that can happen.
Sticking with the same subject of allogeneic versus autologous, now it's over to Mathieu de Calbematin, CEO of Cell Prothera. And first, we will hear a little bit about the company.
It's a company that is really focusing on cell therapy for regenerative medicine. And it's an autologous therapy, so it's actually starting from material, the blood sample from each patient, and then we produce for each patient its own therapeutics, if you want to say so. And our main focus is on cardiovascular disease, where there is an ischemic problem, where there is a destruction of tissue, vascular tissues, because the cells that we are working on are called CD34+. They have this marker at the surface, and they are very strong in regenerating and producing small vessels. So that's for the context, just the origin. It's been now about 15 years this company exists, with actually a spin-off of an institute of research in France that was very much into hematopoietic transplants, stem cell transplant, because those cells actually were used at the beginning to regenerate, repopulate bone marrow for leukemia patients. But then we've discovered that they have many other properties, and that's why we started to work on cardiac disease. So today, how far are we? We've done all this, of course, lab work, preclinical work. We had a very successful proof of concept study that was done already a long time ago. We've seen that patients that had a very poor prognostic after a severe heart attack, had a lot of damage, very poor left ventricle function, almost some of them actually waiting for heart transplant. With our cells, they were able to recover the viability of the vessel wall, of the left ventricle, and therefore the contractility and the function. And based on that, and those patients actually, they've been surviving in average 17 years, but it's a small population. Of course, we're talking about only 7 patients. And then we decided based on that to do a randomized prospective study, clinical trial, phase 1-2B, we call it, that is about to be completed now between France and the UK with UK patient and French patient. So this is randomized. There is a control group. And here we are. That's the final run, the last 100 meters. In 6 months' time, we should have the final data collection.
Oh, that's excellent. I know that we're kind of talking about the allogeneic versus autologous situation. Are they both still evolving?
Yeah, yes. There is always two philosophies, allogeneic and autologous, with their pros and cons. Of course, everybody is aiming to have a stable product, economically sustainable and easy to produce in big scale. That's why allogeneic has more of, generally speaking, is more of the objective of everybody. But in terms of advance, it's not the case. Most of the products, cell therapy products that are approved to the market today are autologous because of the safety, because you are actually not injecting foreign material into a body. And so you don't have to expect all the rejection that is coming up with allogeneic. So there is a lot of research being done. I would say more research done in allogeneic than autologous today. But there are more therapies in the market, autologous than allogeneic. So if you want to, some people are saying, okay, the field is going to start with autologous, and at some point of time, it's going to be replaced by allogeneic. Who knows if this is going to happen? I don't have the crystal ball. But it's going to depend a lot on what we can do with the production of autologous. If we are able to develop very sophisticated, automated systems for autologous, they may be quite competitive as well. And it's going to be very attractive for patients to know that you are your own, you have your own medication. This is personalized medicine. And for the authority, it is also very safe because you don't expect anything. You know this is not going to come from the cells. So autologous, for me, it's a beauty. But if you have to get rid of some constraints, those constraints is, number one, the starting material, because you start with something that each patient is different. He has a different life history. And therefore, the cells are not exactly the same. So this is the first constraint. If you take allogeneic, you would expect this is much more stable because you take healthy donors. But even healthy donors are different. So it's not completely solved, the problem of starting materials. You may have different batch of healthy donors with different characteristics. Then you need to quickly, with autologous, you need to process in time somehow. So that's what we're doing in Cell Proterra. The patient is there. We program an injection in 3 weeks' time, and we have to go. It's all in a row, and we cannot do it next day. We have to wait this three weeks' time. So if there is a therapy that needs to be on the day, that doesn't work with autologous because you have this preparation time. If you had the off-the-shelf allogeneic product, you could administer straight the first day. So that's the advantage of the allogeneic, I would say, if you need to have a very early intervention. But otherwise, yeah, so if you are able to manage this process, and that's what we're doing today, of getting the starting material, producing, and re-administer to the patient without making it too complex in terms of transport, in terms of conservation, and in terms of schedule of patients, etc., if not too cumbersome, that's fine. For example, if you are in the oncology domain and you have to have a patient that is under chemotherapy, you may not be so flexible with your timing. And so it is better to have maybe allogeneic. But in our case, we are talking about cardiovascular patients. They are anyway staying home. You can tell them, okay, in 3 weeks' time, you come to the hospital, you get your administration. That's not a big deal. Then you have a lot logistics. We are working with fresh cells, which is always the best because you lose a lot of cells when you start to try to cryopreserve, and you may even change the characteristics of your the activity of your product. So it's also nice to have a good logistic partner. And today we see there are more and more logistic partners that can offer transport from one point A to point B. So that's the second challenge that has to be solved for Autologous. And I would say the last challenge is the stability, the consistency, let's say, of the production, because you want to have always the best possible quality product at the end of your process. And so if you have a starting material that is a bit changing, you may have to, how do you make sure you still have the same quality product at the end? And so that's why we need to do, there is a general need to improve the process online, real-time process control, where you could actually look at the properties of the cells while they are in the culture and be able to, with a control loop, to adjust the parameters, some critical parameters, so that your critical quality attributes, let's say, are always the same at the end. This is to have finally the risk is that you have an out-of-specification product, which you cannot administer because the quality is not good enough. So you would have collected the tissue from the patient and finally to tell him, sorry, I cannot give you the medication. And that would be ethically also not very good, plus it's costly, etc. Whereas if you are having a batch problem with the allogenic, you can produce another batch and can still administer to the patient. So how you make sure you have consistency from batch to batch, and how to make this happen in Autologous, I think, and this is not, I'm not saying that, it's clear. The more you to standardize your process steps, and probably that means automation, because if you leave it to the hands of operators that have to be trained, and then there is a lot of turnover, it's another person's coming, and that's what we're facing now in our phase two trial. Even if we have a semi-automated device that we have developed to make it as stable as possible, there are still some offline process done manually, and you can see from one team to the next that it's not always the same quality coming out. So to avoid to have additional viability to your process, if you have already the viability of the starting material, I think that's enough. And then you should have it almost no viability of the production steps. And this is coming with automation.
Where do you see the balance between autologous and allogeneic lying as we move forward? I mean, maybe 5 years from now, where do you see that?
That's 5 years. No, it's not much. 5 years when you look
at 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. It starts to become something in this field. I think it's going to be really depending on the safety issue. Is it going to be possible to make it safe for the patient to inject foreign cells? And there is an antidote that you can give, like immunosuppressive drug that have no too much side effect. Then if this is solved, you would expect to have vast majority allogeneic therapies coming up because of the scale up, because of the cost, and that's an advantage, and even because of the logistics. So quality, logistics, etc. Definitely, yes, 70%, there may be still some therapies, some specifics that cannot go through allogenic. But are they going to solve this safety issue? That's really the key point. You know, it's like iPSC cells are mainly allogenic. Yeah. If you start to talk about genetic modification, authorities, first, what they look at is safety. Anything else is coming next. First is safety. Whether if you take too much safety risk, then even if you have efficacy, there's not going to be any way forward. It's really depending on the success of the first one showing, oh, there is no side effect. You can take some little immunosuppressive drug for a while without too much side effect, and that's enough. Then surely in 10 years' time, you will see a majority. Because this is the case today. The majority, I would say, I would expect that there is a majority of clinical trial or at least lab research that is done on allogeneic. You look at the iPSC is very moving forward. Exosome is another one. So there are two, let's say, allogeneic concept, right? Exosome and iPSC. Even if you can do iPSC, autologous iPSC and autologous exosome, but the main goal of these are mainly to be allogeneic.
Even within allogeneic, is sourcing an issue? How do you ensure that it's consistent?
Yeah, that's an issue. I've talked to my colleagues. We are not in allogeneic, we are not autologous, so we know. And this is difficult, but I know those that are working in allogeneic, some of my colleagues, they're also struggling to have a quality, standard quality. Even we do have a lot of our research done with healthy donors that are giving their materials for us to do some research. Variability is very high because each donor is different. The development stage is difficult because you don't know if the clinical parameters are you cannot fine-tune the critical parameters. Your starting materials is being changing all the time, so you don't really know whether if you change a parameter is going to be because of the parameters that the result change, or is because the starting materials was not good enough. So you will need to really characterize very, very carefully the product that you receive. But to come back to the sourcing, yeah, the sourcing is what cord blood. It's donor dependent also. Contamination, different characteristics. Healthy donors, yes, but who knows what really is inside. You could have iPSC is like a cell bank, and then you know it's always the same source. You can reproduce this cell bank forever. At least you know it's always the same one starting material, right? That's a way to do it.
Still quite a bit of work to do then.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's evolving in the right direction in both autologous and allogeneic. So hopefully it is a good thing.
To proof of concept with autologous, safe. Proof of concept that cell therapy can really do the difference and save and cure. And then make it very commercially viable. Then switch to allogeneic, finding some ways to do it. I think this is the way it should go. Because it's still expensive to produce in any case. And if you have to produce one batch per patient, you cannot really have a lot of economies of scales. Except if you have a fully automated closed system where you have a lot of different machines or small incubators going in parallel, then you can start to have a lot of patients produced at the same time. In parallel, this is called scale out. And scale out, you can have a benefit from economies of scale. But it's probably not going to be as high economies of scale like having to produce 10 liters, 100 liters, 1,000 liters, of course.
Switching tack to exosomes and MSCs now, we had the opportunity to talk to Dalip Sethi, Director of Scientific Affairs at Terumo Blood and Cell Technologies.
The first thing then, could you tell me a little bit about the company and what you're doing in this field?
Sure. So my name is Dalip Sethi. I'm Director of Scientific Affairs at Terumo Blood and Cell Technology. Terumo is a medical device company, and we have different business areas. One of them is in blood services. We provide technologies to blood centers for blood processing. We provide technology for apheresis, if you know about apheresis, cell collection services, exchange therapies. And we also provide devices for cell manufacturing. Quantum Flex is our newest platform that we launched, which is based on our quantum platform. Launched around 10 years ago, QuantumFlex is a newer platform, and we also have devices in fill and finish.
The exosome space, what do you do with exosomes?
So we provide technology that can grow MSCs. So our core technology is a hollow fiber bioreactor, for cell culturing, it can culture adherent and suspension cells. So when you think about adherent cells, we can culture them on hollow fiber membrane inside the lumen, and the cartridge is a very compact cartridge, providing our standard bioreactor provides 2.1 meter square or 21,000 centimeter square surface area. So you can culture MSCs there, and you can give different conditioning to create exosomes using the hollow fiber technologies.
Is it a field that's constantly developing? I mean, is it changing all the time, evolving?
Yeah, exosomes are evolving all the time because you can have unmodified exosomes. That was the initial, I would say, generation of exosomes, which are like condition the MSCs for different media types and different environments to get the exosomes out. The newer one is to get the exosomes and modify them, like loading them with different kind of siRNAs. So make sure you can do some modification to RNAs now with different kind of modalities to exosomes now. So it's improving.
You supply those to companies. What are they using them for?
So we provide the technology to the company, and company can use it for different applications, depending on them. Some people are creating exosomes to treat some kind of like cancers, lung cancer. Again, there are some publications on it. So people are using exosomes for different modalities. It's still gaining ground.
Is it something that you think is going to be used more and more in the future?
Yeah, because if you think about exosomes, it's a cell-free nanovesicle, right? So if you think about it, it has its benefits that you don't have to infuse cells. When you're not infusing cells, all the things that you think about infusing stem cell, all the safety features, right? Their differentiation into different kind of cells that you're not intending to, all the immune rejection, if there is a chance of immune rejection, all those things go out when it's a cell-free system. So exosomes are cell-free nanoparticles, which are normally needed by cells to interact, and it has the payload, what I call the payload, or the molecules which are needed. We think MSCs work towards through their parakine effect, right? And exosomes carry those molecules that can be effective in that fashion. So it does provide benefits of cell-free therapeutic when you're using exosomes compared to a cellular-based medicine.
So I guess it's something that you have to keep up with as this field evolves. It's a lot of work for you to stay with the times, I guess.
Yes. So we do look at the field and providing options to the therapeutic developers and consumers. So with the new system that we have launched, Quantum Flex, we have provided two different scales of hollow fiber bioreactor. So in any therapy, whether you think about MSCs or exosomes, you are testing out, you're doing a process development first and figuring out what are the optimal culture conditions to get the molecule, like an exosome, to be produced in the right fashion. So companies can use our new small bioreactor, which is 1/10 of the size of standard bioreactor, 0.2 meter square, to do their process development, understand what kind of exosomes they are creating. And as they move towards clinical trials and commercialization, they can move to a larger bioreactor, which is 2.1 meter square, and carry on with it. The beauty is the same hollow fiber technology. So when we think about the diversity of application, as a technology provider, it's important for us to provide tools which can facilitate GMP compliance and allow process development, clinical trial, and commercial scale as they go through the phases of their development. So that's what we are trying to do, and making sure we can best support the therapy developers from a technology perspective.
I guess you had a press release came out last week about cell therapy production. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. So SpectraOptia is our platform for cell collection. We are leaders in the market, and we provide different tools. So beta services is something that we provide. If you are collecting cells on SpectraOptia, we can support you to help optimize that collection. So we do a lot of work in the space of apheresis and cell collection for the whole ecosystem, providing training, providing optimization services, and trying to help as much as we can, like operator training. So fueling, I would say, supporting and fueling the whole ecosystem to make sure we have the best available resources available to the apheresis society or apheresis community, because it's an important part. It's the raw material for all the cell therapies. And when you think about the raw materials are a very important component as they go through the manufacturing process if you do not do the right cell collection, your chances of manufacturing, like you could have a potential manufacturing failure. So making sure you have a good collection, help optimize that collection, and making sure you have a successful manufacturing throughout. So we also play upstream at the collection part, along with providing manufacturing devices for the GMP.
So I guess you don't just supply the means with which to do this. You also are there every step of the way to help companies optimize that.
I think that's our motto, unlocking the potential. So when we think about unlocking the potential, it's about helping and supporting the whole ecosystem from end to end, not just providing a device, as you said, but supporting the ecosystem, making sure we have the right resources, the training resources, the right scientific and clinical support. If somebody comes to us, we'll help answer the question.
One of the biggest topics lately seems to be artificial intelligence, that it's going to take over the world and make humans obsolete. What do you see as the future of artificial intelligence, especially in drug discovery and drug delivery?
I'll give my personal opinion. I would not say to do more. So when we think about, and the reason I'm saying it, because I'm also doing my master's in business application, and we are doing courses on AI and machine learning. So when we think about AI and machine learning in this aspect of cell manufacturing, one important thing I think about would be the human will not be obsoleted. Human will be supported, by the way, right? If you think about process analytical technologies in cell manufacturing, so the decision making will still be human, but all the process controls, right? When you're thinking about oxygen gases, glucose, lactate, all the parameters that can impact your culture, all that information could be taken by AI or machine learning and presented to a human. It's like, what do you want to do next? I can do it for you if you want to change your flow rate, if you want to do something. That is where I think machine learning and AI would definitely help humans not to be in the bunny suits for a long time, but be bunny suits in the small time and make sure they're making decisions. Because AI making decisions is also like liability. Whose liability it is then once they start making decisions? Maybe in future, I can't predict future, but for now, that's how I think the integration of AI could look like in cell manufacturing.
It's a no-brainer to be able to use it to develop drugs and to help companies move forward more quickly, and ultimately that benefits patients.
True. In the current state, how we use our data sets, let's put it this way. So we do collect data. The data collection is very manual for now, and there are database decisions, right? So if we are looking at cell culture in our quantum flex system or in a hollow fiber technology, we do get the metabolic data as we are culturing cells, and we do make decisions. When we think about AI and machine learning, it goes well beyond that. When we are discussing that, it's like a machine learning can take multiple variables, not just four or five variables, and predict something, a trajectory of a cell growth culture, and change it into a parameter. So when I think about AI and machine learning, and when I'm commenting on that, that's where I think the future is. Currently, yes, we look at that metabolics and make sure we are controlling for it or try to adjust for it using our manual methods, I would say. Manual interventions based on the available data. I see there's a benefits to healthcare because I worked in proteins and nucleic acids in my PhD, and protein modeling and doing in silico testing will definitely, like AI and machine learning will help that in silico models to advance much faster than they used to 10, 15 years ago. So I do see the application of the all new like quantum computing, AI tools. When you apply to protein modeling and finding out the targets for the protein, that will be a useful benefit. Like you said, there are like also negatives that we can think of, but in healthcare, I can also think of all the positives that we can bring with AI and machine learning, including cell culture, which is multivariable analysis, a complex analysis when you're trying to test it.
So are there any other things that you're working on at the moment in terms of cell and gene therapy that you can tell me about?
Oh yeah, definitely. You only have 12 minutes. I can go for 2 hours.
All right. give me the short version.
Yeah, I'll give you the short version. So we have two posters at ISCT. We actually came out of ASGCT last week, 2 weeks ago. Just a week ago. So at ISCT, we have two posters that we're going to do. We are doing a poster on MSC expansion in our new Quantum Flex that we're going to share. We are sharing data where we are showing how we did expansion in two scales, right? We used a standard scale, 2.1 meter square surface area, hollow fiber, and 0.2 meter square surface area, the small bioreactor, and how did we expand and how the scalability looks like. So that's one poster. It's a really interesting poster. And all the functionality of Quantum Flex, we are sharing that in the poster. In the second poster, we are sharing the expansion of HEK cells. So HEK cells are the packaging cells which are used for viral vector production. So as you know, cell therapy, viral vectors are very important particles to do gene modification. And to grow viral vector, to produce viral vectors, you need to grow cell lines like HEK293T. And those are hard to grow given their semi-adherent nature. So we created a protocol, an optimized protocol, and we are sharing that protocol in a poster in our session. We are doing two roundtables. One we did this morning, which conflicted with the exosome one, on apheresis, the sources of variability in apheresis and how to optimize. It happened this morning. We are doing another session on Friday to talk more about and showing a case study, how the things can be optimized. So Dr. John Manis will be sharing some optimized data on how he optimized the collection of CD34 cells on SpectroOptia and how it can be used. So he'll be sharing that. And at ASGCT, which was, again, only a week ago, sounds like a lifetime ago, given the conference was so packed, we shared our T-cell expansion data on Quantum Flex and the CD34s. So hematopoietic stem cell expansion is always hard to do. We shared our suspension cell data at ASGCT. So it was really interesting meeting. And one of the things that we are very passionate about the suspension data, we had two papers last year, which sounds like a long time ago, but from a scientific literature, they're very recent. One in cytotherapy, where we got a very good phenotype in hollow fiber bioreactor, the stem cell memory phenotype of T cells after the expansion. I call it a short paper, but it's a really packed data paper. And then another one on CD34 expansion, which published in Stem Cell Reports, both high impact papers. So we are sharing that data along with some new data that we are generating in the lab.
And to round out the discussion on exosomes, here's a conversation with Carol Nico, CSO at Biocenic.
I'm Carol Nico, Biocenic CSO. I have a PhD and a background of more than 25 years in research. And in October 2023, Biocenic was created from the reverse merger of Bone Therapeutics and Medcenic. Biocenic has decided to take advantage of all the opportunities and potential offered by the innovative platforms of these two companies. So Biocenic owns an allogeneic cell therapy platform named Allob for allogeneic bone. And this platform is derived from bone marrow mesenchymal stem cells. Sorry. This product is really interesting and different because Allob cells can be kept more than 40 months in a cryopreserved condition in liquid nitrogen. And previous clinical trial with convincing results demonstrated a good safety of Allob. And so we have now phase 2B clinical trial that just ended, and we are waiting for the results. This clinical trial was to treat difficult tibial fractures. The second lead API of Biocenic is arsenic trioxide. This platform was used for more than 20 years against promyelocytic leukemia, but Medcenic and now Biocenic is using this arsenic as an immunomodulatory and anti-inflammatory platform to treat autoimmune diseases. Biocenic recently completed a successful phase 2 clinical trial in chronic graft-versus-host disease. We have right now in preparation a phase 3 clinical trial with an oral formulation of arsenic trioxide here against chronic graft versus host disease again. Biocenic also hopes to be able to conduct a phase 3 clinical trial against lupus in 2024. And in 2022 and 2023, Biocenic evidenced and published the optimization of this arsenic trioxide, combining it with copper. So we evidenced with preclinical and in vitro trial that the combination arsenic and copper is a really promising immunomodulatory and anti-inflammatory drug. And we patented that combination a few weeks ago. Now, Biocenic is preparing the future, and we would like to combine our two innovative platforms, the cells and the arsenic trioxide plus copper, in one ATMP, an advanced therapy medicinal product. We would like to create vesicles, exosomes, loaded with this arsenic trioxide copper treatment. This technology will afford to Biocenic a high benefit risk ratio, cost-effective and standardized treatment. And we will evaluate this treatment in autoimmune diseases such as lupus, psoriasis, systemic sclerosis, multiple sclerosis, and others. Projects are already submitted for fundings to European Innovative Council and to Wallon region. So now we are ready to start the new adventure with this combined ATMP with a vesicle from MSCs and arsenic trioxide copper.
I guess if we could talk about exosomes and MSC, could you maybe explain a little bit about the use of exosomes in MSC and how they...
So exosomes are very small vesicles. There are different kinds of vesicles. Exosomes are really small, from 50 to 150 nanometers. They are secreted by MSC cells, but also by all the cells. But those from MSC cells or from our cells, allop cells, will present the coating and the cytoplasm inside the exosome that will be similar to the cells where they come from. So that's the first advantage. This exosome that we would like to produce with allop cells, we are now doing partnerships to be able to load them with our treatment. When exosomes are loaded and targeted with some molecules at the surface of the exosome, they can be targeted to specific cells. We aim at targeting our exosomes to immune cells first, but also cells that have been modified by the immune or inflammatory reactions. Exosomes are really stable. They can be kept on the shelf. So it's a really innovative treatment, a way to bring the drug where you want to bring it. And you can, it allows you to give lower levels of treatment, lower concentrations of treatment, because you bring the treatment to the cells. So the exosomes will go to the cells and they will be able to fix themselves to the cell and deliver what's inside their cargo into the cells for the treatment. So really, Biocenic now is ready to start this kind of combination. In fact, this merger between between Bone Therapeutics and Medcenic offered really the technologies to do this kind of innovative treatments.
How are the exosomes delivered to the cell?
You can give the exosomes in different galenic. It can be IV. It can be in a cream, in a viscose supplement. It will depend on the pathology. So depending on what we want to, the pathology we want to treat, we will elaborate different galenic. My first project There is one on lupus, and there is another one on psoriasis. Depending on that, we will do the Galenic in a cream or also on osteoarthritis, for example, on a viscose supplement. This will bring the exosome nearby, locally, topically, nearby the problem that occurs in the pathology. And the exosome then will be attracted by the cells, because these exosomes will be coated with molecules that are attracted by the diseased cells.
All right. And what kind of uses do exosomes have? I mean, what kind of conditions are they useful to treat?
They could treat so many diseases, because if you apply them on the skin, they can target the cells of the skin. It's a matter of cells. So it will depend where you bring them. But even if you give them IV, they will be attracted, because they are exosome, and exosome are attracted by cells that belong to the inflammation or the immunomodulation. So exosomes, even IV, will be attracted where there is a problem. But if you give them topically, it will be easier. So that's why I'm saying that, for example, in osteoarthritis, we plan to create a viscose supplement containing exosomes. So they can go and treat wherever we manage them to go.
And how do you create them in the first place? Is it something that you can do cheaply and at scale?
So Biocenic will have partnership for that, because exosome is a really new and innovative way to imagine treatment. It's not so easy to create the exosomes. Not so easy as when you say it. So we just found really good partners in Belgium, and we are asking for fundings with them. There are different ways to produce the exosome and different ways to load them. We are going to do partnerships with companies that are able to already quote, produce exosomes and load them. But we are going to try different technologies to do so. It's the really beginning of it. So we have to try all these technologies to know what is the best way to create our exosomes with alloy and loaded with arsenic and copper, because it's not something really usual. Arsenic and copper are metalloid and metal. Usually exosomes contain mRNA, proteins, and small molecules. But metalloid and metal, it's really something different. So we will have to find the best technology to load this cargo into the exosomes. And that is the really innovative part of it.
So I guess it's all developing at the same time, not only the use of them, but the way to create them.
Yeah, all at the same time. We have first to have the exosomes, but when they are going to be ready, we will start to the in vitro part of testing. And at the same time, we'll do the Galenic and the evaluation of the exosomes. That is a matter of 3 or 4 years, I think. We would like to do that and the in vitro and in vivo testing to be ready for preclinical trial as soon as possible. The thing is that arsenic and copper are already used in human. They are described and the safety is known. So this part will help us to be faster.
I guess it's interesting when you're in a new field, and it's probably the case that as it develops, it probably gets cheaper and quicker and easier.
Yes, yes. Exosome, this technology will afford Biocenic a high benefit risk, cost-effective and standardized treatment. It's really, I think it's the future of treatment. And it's also a sustainable way to develop treatments. We could say it's like the chicken and the eggs. You better take the eggs than kill the chicken to have the meat really immediately. It's like the cow and the milk. This way, you use the physical secreted by the cells and you do a sustainable development of your treatment. And really, I think it's in many ways an innovative and really a treatment of the future.
Is it something that would apply to low and middle income countries or?
No, that's really not the aim, because it will depend on the production of the exosomes. And that's why I say that when the technologies will be available, it will be easier to produce exosomes and to keep them for treatment than to multiply cells. Because one cell will secrete many exosomes, like the chicken with the eggs. And when you have a cell therapy, you have to multiply the cells. And as you know, the cells are submitted to mutation, modification. The exosomes will be standardized and one cell will give many exosomes. So that is really less expensive to grow exosomes and cells. And then cells, as they're alive, you have to keep them either cryopreserved or for a short period of time. And when it's not good anymore, you have to throw them away. For exosome, you can keep them at an interesting temperature and for a long period. So that's also economically really interesting.
So I guess the field of using exosomes will probably look very different 5 years from now.
Yes, I'm sure we are just at the beginning, and Biocenic is really, with all the skills and the patents with Allob and the drugs, is really at the very beginning of that. And I think, yes, in 5 years, we will know a lot more. And I'm sure it's a really promising way to treat many pathologies. We'll start with autoimmune diseases, immune-related diseases, but it will show a way to load exosomes anyway. So we are really in the very beginning of this construction of a new ATMP.
Sounds really exciting. Are there any challenges to it? Are there any difficulties?
Yes, there are difficulties. Technically, we have to create this exosome, qualify them. How to create the exosomes? It's not Biocenic path. So we have to find partners that are ready to go, to spend time and a lot of money to create the best technologies to do so. And in Belgium, we met many, many companies able to do different kinds of production of exosomes, different kind of loadings. And we are going to try a few of them to be able to obtain the best exosomes. But that's really difficult to choose at first which technology will be the best one. So you have to try a few of them, but you cannot try everything. So it's a technical difficulty, which is not the part of Biocenic. Biocenic will help to modelize them, to evaluate them, but the technical difficulties are huge, but we have great partners.
And so that's it for another week. There's a village fair here on Saturday, and after weeks of no rain, their planning is impeccable because there are thunderstorms forecast all day. Next week's interview is already done, but I haven't quite got to editing it yet. Still playing catch up and losing. So thanks a lot for joining us, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Take care, and you'll join us next week for another Beyond Biotech.